se mundo zivuga mu bigaya gakenye bonye wakomba
Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 25th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Dama Rugaba. Dama is a Rwandan who spent his early years living in eastern Congo before living and working as a pilot in Rwanda as a young man. He arrived in the United States in 2000 and now is employed at Unum. He lives in Westbrook, Maine, and welcome to New Mainers Speak, Dama.
Thank you for having me.
It's such a pleasure. Can you start by telling us what it was like where you grew up?
Where I grew up in eastern Congo, and our family tradition, we are cattle keepers. So I grew up in the green pastures, playing with cows. But most importantly, I grew up in a very safe environment where grown-ups will look after young ones, and that's the memory that I keep.
Were there many people in your family?
Yes, we have a big family. My immediate family, we are eight in our family. I have five boys and three girls. And the extended family were all around us.
Would that include aunts and uncles and grandparents on both sides?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They lived, all of them lived in a very short distance, maybe about 20 miles from us. So we grew up visiting grandparents from both sides, aunties and cousins. So it's big family. I cannot come down with a number at this moment, but it's a big, big family.
You don't even have a number. When I look at images of eastern Congo and Rwanda on the internet, I see lions and baboons and giraffes and elephants. Did you see those kinds of things growing up? Were you in the savannah?
Yes, I grew up near a national park. It's called the Virunga Park, and it's still a national park until today. And we used to go on vacation, on school trips. We used to go to visit the national park where you see the lions, you see the elephants, you see the rhinos. Yeah, so it was part of our community there. And we have also the mountain gorillas on the border of Congo and Rwanda and Uganda. So we grew up seeing all these kinds of animals around.
This is a big area of industry right now for Rwanda, having ecotourism where people come and get to see the mountain gorillas.
Yes, it's big business in Rwanda right now, and they have even started cultures, and they have these big parties when a baby gorilla is born and they name them. So it's very big business down there at this moment.
Have you seen mountain gorillas?
No, I've seen chimpanzees, but I've never come close to a mountain gorilla yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're beautiful. All such beautiful animals in such a gorgeous land.
Yes, it is.
I'm so impressed with your country. Your family is part of the diaspora. What happens when people are in areas where people leave, they leave not just to one area, but all over the world. And you were telling me earlier you have a brother in Canada, a brother in D.C., and I imagine all over. What's that like? Do you still have family back in Rwanda and eastern Congo?
Yes, my father and mother still lives in Rwanda, and my three sisters and one brother. excuse me. Right now, I have all my brothers from Canada, from D.C., and one that lives in Burundi. They're right here visiting this weekend. And I like to joke all the time when people talk about globalization. I always say that, you know, globalization started within families, because people live all over the world from one family. One lives in Europe, one lives in Canada, one lives in Africa. So that's how the world has changed these days.
Yeah, it really makes us one people, right? Who cares if you're Canadian or American? You're both brothers.
You're right, that's true.
Yeah, really transcends that. So you were living in Rwanda in 1994, 20 years ago, and that was the year of the genocide. What was that like, being in Rwanda then?
Rwanda was a devastated country. You could smell the death everywhere you went. There were bodies piled in every place, you could imagine. And many people they thought Rwanda would never come up from that. But the Rwandan people are resilient and have come past that. They have never forgotten, but they have tried to move their lives forward.
Where does that resilience come from? It seems to me almost an impossible task to come back from losing 500,000 to 1 million people in a calendar year.
I think it's lack of other choices. What else could they do? The president of Rwanda likes to say that that we hit the bottom. There's nowhere else to go.
But up.
But up. So we had no other choice but going up.
Well, that may be true. That was a really terrible time. And I understand that people from Rwanda don't want to forget that. They want to make sure that people use this as a model for what not to do and stop before anything gets that far.
Yes, and here every year we commemorate the genocide, and we've done it here at USM once, but for the last couple of years we've been doing it at the Portland High School. And really, it can happen to anybody. So if we think that by sharing our history, we may prevent something like that from happening in any other place.
Rwanda has something kind of unique about it in that it has the world's highest proportion of females in government positions in proportion to the population of anywhere in the world. They have more women as elected officials and deputies, 45 of them, making a majority in the parliament there. Do you think that what the women are bringing is more peace? Or how does that work, having so many women? How did all those women get in there?
The first reason many men were killed during the genocide, either others killed, and then women were left to take responsibility of their household. And we like to say in our culture that men are disciplinary, but women are always, they always bring love. They are the ones to comfort their children. And I believe, I don't know why, but I think Rwanda just took a decision to say women have to be part of the rebuilding. And there's no doubt that they have done a tremendous work. They have shaped even the laws in the country. In most African countries, women didn't have the right to inherit from their families.
But property.
Property. And but now everything has changed in Rwanda. And that's because women are part of the decision makers.
Well, that's encouraging. I love having that as a model, and I love the idea of more love in government.
And I think the government in the constitution, they put it that women will have at least 30% representation in the parliament. So in addition to the 30% that's allocated to women, then they don't have a huge number now. They have that 30%, but again, when they go in campaign, they gain more seats because they have the advantage of having already the 30%. And they did it on purpose because they wanted them to have a say in what is taking place in Rwanda.
And I understand another tact was taken for trying to make sure that the genocide didn't happen again. They said no political party can be based on cultural heritage or lineage. Or
right.
Help me there.
Yeah, that was part of it, but the other part of it, their system is not the winner takes it all. No party will govern itself. They have to share with opposition leaders. No party will have the president and have the president of the Senate at the same time. One has to come from the other so that at least they have the shared responsibility instead of the winner takes it all. And all that is to try to prevent the future violence.
A balance of power built in.
Right.
That sounds smart. Is that working?
I don't follow much the politics, but I think it is working. Because if you see the tremendous development that are happening in Rwanda, I think it's because they are all working together instead of working against each other.
Yes.
That's what I can say. But you can see the improvement from the last 20 years.
There was a post-genocide legal process in Rwanda called International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. ICTR is the easier way to say that, it turns out. A little bit like the truth and reconciliation process in South Africa, but different. How much did these courts affect the people's hearts and minds of that region as for rebuilding and forgiveness and moving on after the genocide?
I think the ICTR, the first thing, wasn't in Rwanda. If it was in Rwanda and all these court proceedings took place in Rwanda and people who lost their loved ones were part of the proceedings and were watching, I think it would have made a difference. But this court was based in Tanzania. It's way, way from Rwanda.
How far would Tanzania be from Rwanda?
It's a border country, but the Arusha, the town where this ICTR is based, is probably maybe 800 or 900 miles from Rwanda.
Wow.
So people didn't even get a chance or a closure to know what was happening. So I don't think this helped the Rwandans into their reconciliation. But Rwanda, they had what they call, in Rwanda, they had what they call Gacaca. Gacaca comes from an old tradition. Gacaca means the grass, where people sit on the grass under the tree to resolve their grievances. So with a huge number of people in jail, Rwanda couldn't manage and didn't have any judicial system, because everything was completely done by the end of genocide. So they introduced this traditional way of resolving the cases in a more quicker way, but at the same time, bringing people into their villages and have them say what they did or say what they did not do, and then their neighbors saying yes is right, yes is wrong. And for those who acknowledge their role, most of them were able to be forgiven and released from prison. I think that brought more closure than the ICTR did to the Rwandan people.
Well, the local process certainly touched your lives more than something happening 800 miles away.
Definitely. That made it, because people were able to know where their loved ones were buried. They were able to go and get their remains and rebury them in a more respectful way, because the killers confessed and they told them where. At least this brought closure to the survivors than what took place in Arusha, Tanzania.
Who funded the ICTR?
The ICTR was funded by the United Nations.
And to the tune of $1 billion?
Yes, it took about $1 billion for the last, more than $1 billion for the last 10, 20 years. And if you put into account how many people they have been able to bring to justice, it's less than 30 people. So some people question if that money was worth spending in that fashion.
My understanding is that the tribunal's work was to provide a precedent for future international criminal courts and various national jurisdictions. But I think your point about keeping it local is really profound.
If it was local and people were participants in what was happening, I think it would have made a difference. Maybe they would have received, the closure they wanted. But the Rwandans didn't think that was for them. They thought, okay, that's just the UN bureaucracy. They're just trying to cover
and then
their failure, and they put this in just to say, oh, we are doing something, but they didn't see that was for them.
I think that was really courageous to make their own justice in their own towns.
again, I don't think they had any other choice.
Well,
true. Yeah, because what they said, if they had to put these people into the traditional courts, the more you put them in front of a judge, have them represented by a lawyer, some would have died in prison before they even got their day in court.
Too many to actually process.
Right.
You are listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. Today I'm visiting with Dama Rugaba. Originally from Rwanda and Eastern Congo, he is the president of the Rwandese Community Association of Maine. Their mission is to create and integrate healthy, productive, and vibrant Rwandan community in Maine. But Dama has a bigger concept he's working on as well. Beyond working and being the president of the Rwandan community, serving on a local board and raising a family, you also have a dream project you're working on. Can you tell us about your hopes for a Maine Integration Center for incoming immigrants?
The Maine Integration Center came from a discussion with other community leaders. And the idea came from, we have so many service providers that assist immigrants here, and they do a tremendous work. And they have helped so many people who are coming in here and integrate. But we felt that there was something missing. Most of these services, they don't talk to each other. Some people may know how to juggle through them, some may not. So we figured if we have a full package and just help them navigate through all these systems, we'll help them move from point A to point B. And so we've been discussing with other groups to see how we can join our forces and work together. Instead of having a Rwandan Community Association, a Congolese Community Association, a Burundian Community Association, we all face the same challenges, we all face the same issues, so why don't we join our forces and work together to make sure our community members get the services they need and take advantage of those services to move beyond the services they get.
It's a brilliant idea, and now we may have different needs today than we had a few years ago when we had a smaller influx of immigrants. So now joining forces is probably a brilliant idea. I think it's kind of been an ad hoc kind of thing where one agency provides a service that's needed and then another steps in and provides a different service that's needed. And now we have quite a wide array, and it would be great to have somebody to neaten the deck, get everybody headed in the right directions.
Right, and our hope is to have this collaborative framework where the community leaders, the community served, the service providers get together and discuss what's needed, what needs to be done, how can we get this, so at least even the recipient of the services themselves are part of this. Because if you want to help them, know what they need. So we want them to be involved in the decision in what's affecting their lives. And we hope to work in a collaborative framework where we bring each of us pieces of knowledge that we have, or how we've improved lives. How can we use the best example from this other organization and implement it in ours? And so we think by talking to each other, we can do more good. Not to say that there haven't been any good done, but we can do better.
Yes, just by coordinating and talking to each other.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know of any other cities or countries with such centers?
There is one in Boston, and it's called the Center for Support Immigrant Organizing. But this one is kind of a virtual office. What they do, they help immigrant organizations to better organize themselves, to better advocate for their needs, to better serve their communities. There is another one in Nashville, Tennessee, called the CASA As a Friend. This is a center that houses multiple service providers. So when an immigrant goes in, if he wants to learn English, he'll learn right there. If he needs financial literacy, we'll run in the same center. If he needs health education, through the same center. But for, I don't know if that's where we'll be heading. We're still discussing. But for us, it's no more about, it's not more about providing services, but it's to help the immigrants and help the service providers provide the right services that are needed and maybe prevent some duplication along the way.
Sounds like a good idea. So like a centralized clearinghouse for services.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And my guess is you would have things there such as options for translation, direct people to translators. Is that right?
Right. As and as I said, since we are working as a group, so each community will be represented in there. So we'll have translators from the community. And we want, and we always say that we've gone through this road. We may have more information to help the newcomers. Maybe don't step, maybe don't hit a stone that I hit on my way. Just to kind of help them move smoothly and quickly through the process of integration and go beyond just receiving services, but actually being a contributing member of our main society.
I think that's a really great point because it's not a race, but you can get waylaid not knowing there are wonderful resources available to you. And if you don't have the support, you may not locate them. So you could help people to becoming productive contributing citizens even sooner.
That's correct. And I think when we had a conversation a couple of days ago, I was saying that when people come here, there's a lot of things that they see, they want to do, but they don't know how to get there. They may tell them, you know, I go to the general assistance to get rent. But he didn't come here for rent only. He came here, he wants to get a job. He wants to, okay, in order to get a job, I need to have my papers. So you need to apply for asylum. We think that by having a center, if someone walks through there and says, okay, these are the steps that you need to go through, and we help that person go through all these steps, that will kind of expedite the process. Instead of him getting a piece of information there, a piece of information there, it will take him a while before he can figure out how to do it himself or herself.
I think that's wonderful, and I'm sure it would feel a lot safer and more comfortable to know that someone's got your back, someone's there to help you navigate a very complicated system.
And someone who understands your needs and someone who speaks your language and someone who's been there before. So I think it would be comforting to see that the person who's helping me has gone through the same. So I'm in the right hand. That's the approach we're trying to.
I think it's a win-win. I think it helps the individual coming in, and I think it helps the community to eventually benefit from the gifts that person brings.
Definitely.
The research on Americans' metropolitan regions shows that those places with higher share of foreign-born residents are more likely to achieve economic growth over time, even accounting for the fact that growth attracts immigrants. And I thought that was such an interesting little point. So often immigrants are likely to start their own businesses and start their own industries. And it makes an impact on a community over the long haul.
You got to put it this way. People, when they get here, it's like they've been given a second chance. They're here to work. They're here to, they say, at least they have a climate or an atmosphere that allows me to do everything that I can within my power, which they didn't have. And that's the reason they came here. So I've yet to see someone who's there saying, I'm going to sit down and just sit. People come here for a reason. They come here because they want to better themselves. And the only way they can do that is by working hard. So if we can contribute in helping that process very fast and smooth so that people start contributing, I'm pretty sure Maine will be a different place.
How might a center have changed your acculturation process? You've been here 14 years, so when you came, our immigrant population was probably about 1%. It's now about 3.3. What would that have been like? How might that have changed your trajectory?
It took me about 8 years to go back to school. And because I was afraid, how am I going to go to school and support my family at the same time? How am I going to focus when my family is still in Africa? So it took me a while, and you had to juggle through probably learning everything on your own. But if there was a place where someone would tell me, no, do this, do this, do this, this would be helpful. Or a place where I should go and say, you know, this is what I want to do. How can I get there? And someone showing me the road, how I can juggle through that, I probably would have wasted less time. I maybe planned ahead of time, and maybe the situation, I'm not in a bad situation, but the situation must have been even better than it is today. And that's what I hope.
To do for others.
To do for others.
Mm-hmm. How can others get involved or show support for such a center if they're listening today and they think, this is where I want to put my time and efforts? How might they find you? How might they get involved with this project for a Maine Integration Center?
My phone, I can provide you my phone number, whoever wants to. And we definitely need all the help we can get. The first thing we want to put the word out that this center is needed just to help the new immigrants who are coming in. And the way we can put the word out, maybe USM can help us with their computer science students by building a website. And the other thing that we believe can be maybe the starting point for this center is to do a comprehensive research on the integration process in Maine. How do people struggle? What's needed? What has been done? What hasn't been done right? How has it been helpful? How has not been helpful? So at least we have this information to know what's working, what's not working. And at the same time, again, if there's someone there who's interested in a research who can come and partner with us, we'll be glad to work with them.
Great. I'll get that information. I'll put a link to it on my resource page on newmainerspeak.com.
Thank you.
Dama, you are such a generous person. With a beautiful intention of supporting an inclusive, productive, and thriving community right here in Southern Maine. I have loved getting to visit with you about your community building work. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
My pleasure.
I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Dama Rugaba. You have been listening to New Mainers Speak. We will close today's program with some music that Dama has selected for us. Can you tell us a little bit about that before we go to that?
This song is about praise for the beauty of Rwanda. It talks about the beautiful Rwanda, the country of a thousand hills with big lakes and volcanoes with its gorilla-like habitats. So it's pretty much about Rwanda. Love to sing this song just to remember how beautiful their country is.
Thank you.
Yeah.